48. 60 Minutes started with the interviewer recapping what Weigert considered the least important aspects of anything. Ben Klarby's theft of proprietary corporate data. His murder, currently under investigation by the FBI. And a mercifully brief mention of misuse of that data, also under investigation. If the FBI had insisted on the brevity, Weigert was grateful to them. The recitation was accompanied by shots of Cayman Brac and the exterior of the compound. The interviewer, Richard Diaz, introduced Julian as a former Silicon Valley boy genius, Weigert as an eminent physicist, and an on-screen photo of the late Nobel laureate Samuel Lewis Watkins as the inventor of a kino. Diaz then turned to Julian. "Tell us why your scientific research compound has attracted so much attention. What's going on here?" "What's going on, Richard, is the most exciting medical research on the planet, rigorously developed over 15 years. What we have discovered here is nothing less than a complete upending of everything you think you know about reality. Everything, including what you think you know about death." "That's a lot to accept. Let's back up a bit. You, Dr. Weigert, and Dr. Watkins founded Reality Check 15 years ago. How did that come about?" "As a direct result of George Weigert's theory of the primacy of the observer." Julian talked briefly about building and equipping the compound, accompanied by photos. He finished with, "You don't need a medical facility and a hospital to develop physics theories. You do need those to take them a step farther and alter how human consciousness works. But Reality Check began with George's revolution. Every now and then, a simple idea shakes the foundations of knowledge. The discovery that the Earth was not flat challenged the way people perceived themselves and their relationship with the world. Einstein's relativity theories upended classical physics, and then quantum mechanics did it again. Likewise, the primacy of the observer upends conventional science." Diaz turned to Weigert. "And how does it do that?" This was, for Weigert, the heart of the interview, and he'd been endlessly rehearsed in how to reply. He leaned forward slightly, paused, and said, "With the seemingly absurd idea that the universe springs from life, not the other way around." Another pause before he continued. The next speech had been written by Julian to be accessible to the layman. Weigert had argued for more fundamentals of science, but he'd had to give in. After all, the speech was accurate, even if it did present mostly conclusions and not the necessary scientific steps to reach them. "Switching our perspective on the universe, from physics to biology, shatters everything we have ever known about reality. We think life is just an accident of physics, but a long list of experiments suggests the opposite. Amazingly, if you add life and consciousness to the equation, you can explain some of the biggest puzzles of science. For instance, it becomes clear why space and time, and even the properties of matter itself, depend on the observer. It also becomes clear why the laws of the universe are fine-tuned for the existence of life. Until we recognize the universe in our head, attempts to understand the world will remain a road to nowhere. We are taught since childhood that the universe is divided into two entities, ourselves and that which is outside of us. This seems logical. Self is commonly defined by what we can control. We can move our fingers, but I cannot wiggle your toes. The dichotomy is based largely on manipulation. Even if basic biology tells us we have no more control over the trillions of cells in our body than over a rock or a tree. Consider everything you see around you right now. Your chair, the TV cameras, your own hands. Language and custom say it all lies outside us in the external world. However, everything you see and experience is a whirl of information occurring in your mind. You are this process. Your eyes are not just a portal to the world. You cannot see anything through the bone surrounding your brain. No, what you are seeing is a construction inside your head. One simple example, the sky. You see it as blue, but the cells in your brain could be changed so the sky looks green, or even red. In fact, with a little genetic engineering, I could probably make everything that is red vibrate, or make a noise, or trigger a desire in you to have sex, as color does with some birds. Your brain circuits could be changed so that, on a sunny day, it looks dark out. This logic applies to virtually everything. Bottom line, what you see could not be present without your consciousness. Diaz said, I never thought of it that way. No, most people don't. Julian already mentioned how shocked the scientific world was at the experimental findings of quantum physics. That was because, in the early 20th century, science was still operating with an outdated paradigm. Now, we still believe there is an external world that exists independent of the perceiving subject, but philosophers and physicists from Plato to Hawking have debated this idea. Niels Bohr, the great Nobel Prize-winning physicist, disagreed. Flash on the TV of a picture of Bohr, looking avuncular, with his words underneath. George gave them in voiceover. When we measure something, we are forcing an undetermined, undefined world to assume an experimental value. We are not measuring the world, we are creating it. At their legendary debates, Einstein, another photo with the iconic wild hair, presented ingenious ideas supporting the idea of a real world out there. But Bohr shot them all down and gradually won over the physics community. Wigner, winner of the 1963 Nobel Prize, insisted that the very study of the external world leads to the conclusion that the content of consciousness is an ultimate reality. However, today most people still believe there is a real world out there, despite the scientific evidence. We look at the world like, for example, a squirrel. The squirrel opens its eyes and sees an acorn just miraculously sitting there. The squirrel grabs it and scurries up the tree without further thought. But experiment after experiment shows that the acorn is made of particles, and not a single particle exists with real properties if no one is observing. Diaz looked genuinely interested. Was he pretending? Weigert couldn't tell, although of course these media people were all actors. Diaz said, Tell us about the scientific evidence. He smiled reassuringly at the camera. Briefly, anyway. As Weigert spoke, spectacular graphics appeared on the screen, illustrating his points for an untrained audience. The drama coach had rehearsed Weigert to allow enough time to let each animated graphic complete its motions. Consider the famous two-slit experiment, which has been performed a number of times in various ways. When scientists watch a particle pass through two slits in a barrier, the particle behaves like a bullet and goes through one hole or the other. However, if you do not watch, it acts like a wave and can go through both holes at the same time. But how can a particle out there change its behavior depending on whether you watch it or not? The answer is simple. Reality is a process that involves our consciousness. He leaned forward slightly in his chair, as he'd been coached to do. Consider Heisenberg's famous uncertainty principle. If there really were a world out there with particles just bouncing around, then we should be able to measure all their properties, but you cannot. For instance, a particle's exact location and momentum cannot be known at the same time. But why should it matter to a particle what you decide to measure? Again, the answer is simple. The particles are not just out there. So it really does not take a quantum physicist to realize that reality is a process that involves our consciousness, which is why we need to replace the old physics with a new biology. All right, Diaz said. You've just annihilated matter. But how about space and time? Surely they are real, in the sense that ordinary people mean? No, Weigert said. Space and time are not hard, cold objects, like the shells you pick up along the beach. Starting in the 1920s, experiments have shown just the opposite. The observer critically influences the outcome. Space and time are simply the mind's tools for putting everything together. Consider the electron, which has turned out to be both a particle and a wave. But how, and more importantly, where such a particle will be located is dependent upon the very act of observation. These, and similar experiments, including Einsteinian relativity, point toward an inescapable conclusion. The observer is what determines space. We've come to regard space as a sort of vast container that has no walls. However, multiple illusions and processes are what give us that false view of space. For example, distances between objects can and do mutate, depending on a multitude of conditions, such as gravity and speed, with the result that no bedrock distance exists anywhere, between anything and anything else. In fact, quantum theory casts serious doubt on whether individual items are truly separated at all. We see separations between objects only because we have been conditioned by language and convention to draw boundaries. The same is true of time. Quantum theory increasingly casts doubts about the existence of time as we know it. When people speak of time, they are usually referring to change. But change is not the same thing as time. To measure anything's position precisely at any given instant is to lock in on one static frame of its motion, as in a film. Conversely, as soon as you observe movement or momentum, you cannot isolate a frame, because momentum is the summation of many frames. Sharpness in one parameter induces blurriness in the other. Time is simply the way we animate events, the still frames of the spatial world. It, too, is a tool of our mind. Diaz shifted on his chair. Weigert held his breath. Caro had warned him that parts of the science might be edited out, but not this next critical aspect of his theory. It wasn't gone. The on-screen Weigert continued, backed by graphics even more colorful and frenetic. Consider an experiment published in the prestigious scientific journal, Science. Scientists in France shot photons into an apparatus and showed that what they did could retroactively change something that had already happened in the past. You heard that right. As the photons passed a fork in the apparatus, they had to decide whether to behave like particles or waves when they hit a beam splitter. Later on, well after the photons passed the fork, the experimenter could randomly switch a second beam splitter on and off. It turns out that what the observer decided at that point determined what the particle actually did at the fork in the past. At that moment, the experimenter chose his past. Another pause, this time by the interviewer, who finally said, as if he had just thought of it, "But all this takes place in the microscopic world. Isn't it true that our macroscopic world, the world we experience every day, behaves differently?" That's what was believed for a long time. But the idea that there exists one set of laws for small objects and another for the rest of the universe, including us, has no basis in reason and is being challenged in laboratories around the world. Quantum entanglement, in which two objects are entangled, and what you do to one affects the other, no matter how far apart they are. More graphics. These definitely too gaudy, but Weigert had lost that particular argument. is another refutation of the idea of space. Scientists have succeeded in entangling 3-millimeter-wide diamonds, entangling huge molecules called buckyballs, entangling even crystals with entanglement ridges a half inch high. What is done to one item in the entangled pair instantly affected the other item, even at a distance. Both the microscopic and macroscopic world are generated by consciousness. Diaz nodded. Which brings us to what I found to be the most startling image in your book, the disappearing kitchen. Tell us about that. Now, a very detailed graphic appeared. A cartoon kitchen with stove, sink, refrigerator, dishes on shelves, and cookbooks on a counter. A tea kettle the color of a fire engine, an overhead light big as a wagon wheel, and a cartoon avatar. The on-screen Weigert began his voiceover speech in the slightly too dramatic way that the drama coach had insisted on. Take the seemingly undeniable logic that your kitchen is always present. You think its contents assume all their familiar shapes and colors, whether or not you are in it. But consider. The shapes, colors, and forms known as your kitchen are seen because particles of light from the overhead bulb bounce off the various objects and then interact with your brain through a complex set of retinal and neural intermediaries. But on its own, light doesn't have any color, or any brightness, or any visual characteristics at all. It is merely an electromagnetic phenomenon. So you might think that the kitchen was there in your absence. But the unquestionable reality is this. Nothing remotely resembling what you can imagine could be present when a consciousness isn't interacting. Quantum physics agrees with that startling statement. At night, as you click off the lights and leave for the bedroom, you expect that the kitchen remains there, unseen, all through the night. The cartoon avatar sashayed out of the kitchen, hitting the light switch. Weigert winced. But, in fact, said his voiceover, the refrigerator, stove, and everything else are composed of a shimmering swarm of matter, energy. The kitchen dissolved into a silver-gray blur. Proven physics tells us that not a single one of the subatomic particles that make up your kitchen actually occupies a definite place. Rather, they exist as a range of possibilities, as waves of probability, as Max Born demonstrated 100 years ago. The particles are statistical predictions, nothing but a likely outcome. In fact, outside of that idea, nothing is there. If they are not being observed, the particles cannot be thought of as having any real existence, either duration or a position in space. It is only in the presence of an observer, that is, when you go back in to get a drink of water. Cartoon figure returned, flicked the light switch, and the kitchen reappeared. That the mind sets the scaffolding of these particles in place. Until it actually lays down the threads, somewhere in the haze of probabilities that represent the object's range of possible values, they cannot be thought of as being either here or there, or having an actual position, a physical reality. Of course, once the wave function of the kitchen has collapsed, a record of it remains in our memory, and when we return to the kitchen, our memories agree with it. In scientific terms, the kitchen degrees of freedom recorded in our memory collapse the first time we observed the kitchen. Another way to think about this is to think about watching a DVD. When the player is off, there is no movie. But when you return to the room and turn the player on, it leaps back into view. No matter how many times you turn the player on or off, the movie does not change. Emerald City is always at the end of the yellow brick road. Another dramatic pause. The conscious observer is primary. It creates everything else. Diaz looked directly into the camera. Ordinarily, our time for this segment of 60 minutes would be over, but we haven't even reached the most important aspect of this, so Stay with us for more. Cut to a commercial. A babble of voices around Weigert, which he ignored. As far as he was concerned, they'd already covered the most important aspects, however hastily. Caroline leaned over his shoulder and said, George?
It was acceptable, he said,
and he could hear the smile in her voice when she said, good. After the commercial, Julian gave a polished, comprehensible explanation of the computer chips he'd developed to alter the way the brain processed information received from the senses. There was a clip of Caro and Trevor, masked and gowned in the OR, leaning over a table that Weigert knew had been filmed with no one on it. Back to Julian, who finished with, insert the programmed chips into the brain. It's an operation that is no more dangerous or difficult than routine insertion of direct brain stimulation to control the tremors of Parkinson's disease. The result is a direct lead from the brain to an unobtrusive control box outside the skull. See? Here's mine. Julian leaned forward and parted his hair with his hands. The camera zoomed in. With this implant and the extensive and proprietary programming on our computers, my consciousness can, and has, created another branch of the universe and temporarily inhabited it. Diaz said, with great animation, let's talk about those other branches of the universe. People who have undergone implant surgery claim that when their brain chips are activated, they can enter branch universes where they see and talk with their beloved dead. Not a hallucination, not a dream about people who have passed, but actual versions of those people, solid and alive, in another universe. Reality Check also claims that these people stay alive in their universes after the implantee leaves. Julian, what can you tell us about how your implanted chips make that possible? The photo of Einstein reappeared, with a different quotation. Julian's voiceover said,
after the death of an old friend, Albert Einstein wrote, now Besso has departed from this strange world a little ahead of me. That means nothing. People like us know that the distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion. All the evidence Dr. Weigert just explained tells us that Einstein was right. Death is an illusion.
Our classical way of thinking is based on the belief that the world has an objective, observer-independent existence. And so we think life is just the activity of carbon and an admixture of molecules. We live a while and then rot into the ground. We believe in death because we associate ourselves with our body and we know bodies die. End of story. Only the story is false, and primacy of the observer tells us death may not be the terminal event we think. Scientists have puzzled for a long time over why the laws, forces, and constants of the universe appear to be exquisitely fine-tuned for the existence of life. This could be just an astounding coincidence, but science doesn't like astounding coincidences. The simplest explanation is that the laws and conditions of the universe allow for the observer because the observer generates them. Like space and time, they are simply tools our minds use to create reality. Death doesn't exist in a timeless, spaceless world. Immortality doesn't mean a perpetual existence in time. It resides outside of time altogether. We generally reject the multiple universes of science fiction, but it turns out there is scientific support for this popular genre. As Dr. Weigert just explained, one well-known aspect of quantum physics is that observations can't be predicted absolutely. Instead, there is a range of possible observations, each with a different probability. One mainstream explanation, the many worlds interpretation, states that each of these possible observations corresponds to a different universe, the multiverse. There are an infinite number of universes,
and everything that could possibly happen occurs in some universe. Death does not exist in any real sense in these scenarios. All possible universes exist simultaneously, regardless of what happens in any of them. When we die, we do so not in a random billiard ball universe, but in an inescapable life universe. Life has a non-linear dimensionality. It's like a perennial flower that returns to bloom in the multiverse. Although individual bodies are destined to self-destruct, the alive feeling, the "who am I?" is just a 20-watt fountain of energy operating in the brain. But this energy doesn't go away at death. One of the surest axioms of science is that energy never dies. It can neither be created nor destroyed. Time and space are simply the way our mind puts quantum information together, organizing it into the reality we see and experience. Our individual separateness, whether in this universe or between multiverses, is an illusion. The consciousness that was behind the youth you once were is also behind who you are now and who you will be anywhere in space and time. Ultimately, they are all melted together, parts of a single entity that transcends space and time. And if space and time aren't real things, in what sense can you consider yourself separate from another you that exists in space and time? The same is true of the people you love who have died. Their bodies have died, but their consciousness continues to exist in other universes. And using this new chip technology, which changes the algorithms by which your brain processes information, you can see them again. A long moment of silence before the interviewer said, "With us tonight are three people who claim to have had that experience." The scene widened to show one of Julian's techs, Christopher Agarwal, along with Nurse Ortega and Ms. O'Malley, all seated on the stage. Let's start with Stephanie O'Malley, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and, as I can tell you from personal experience, not an easy person to delude. Steph, tell us why you went to Reality Check and what happened to you there. The TV people had wanted to play recordings of the actual sessions, but Julian had adamantly refused. Those were private. But Ms. O'Malley's recounting of her meeting with her dead lover was vivid and gripping. Of course, she was a journalist. Vividness was what she was trained to offer. Still, the other two related their sessions. Neither had Ms. O'Malley's articulate fervor. But somehow that reinforced what the youngsters said. Their fumbling to explain what they'd experienced, their obvious awe, seemed to Weigert very moving. Then it was his turn. As the screen zoomed in for a close-up of his face, the watching Weigert stiffened in his chair. How might they edit this? His image said, "I saw, still see, each time I activate my chip, my wife, Rose. She died of cancer 16 years ago." "I'm so sorry," the interviewer said, and Weigert brushed past this like the platitude it was. "As Julian explained, death is an illusion. My wife exists in another universe. And with the help of Julian's software and my implanted chip, I can again stand beside her. And I do." The interviewer paused before saying, "So the dead are not really dead. But without Reality Check's technology, neither we nor they can see each other." "No," Weigert said, "but they are there. Consciousness cannot experience nothing because consciousness is defined as being aware of something." The cover of The Primacy of the Observer filled the TV screen. The interviewer said, "The full explanation of Dr. Weigert's theory is here, in his new book. I'm sure that all our viewers feel that our guests tonight have given us a lot to think about." A commercial for toothpaste, and someone turned off the TV.
Julian turned to his techs, all bent over laptops.
Ivan? Slam dunk! Huge number of online responses. Not necessarily in terms of favorability, but in... Everybody wants to know more about the death thing. Everybody. Dr. Weigert, you're going to be rich.
Irrelevant, Weigert said, and didn't understand why everybody laughed. Still, it had gone better than he'd expected. The interview had treated his theory with respect. Not enough hard science, but he'd known that would happen. The important thing was that more people would hear about and might come to understand what reality actually was. That was worth having endured the drama coach. He turned in his chair to face Julian.
Maybe we should celebrate?
Oh, George, Julian said. Look around you. We are. A party had erupted in the refectory, champagne corks being popped. Aiden seemed to be mixing some lethal concoction in a big metal tub. Then music, and people started to dance. Caroline held out her hand to Weigert, and he surprised himself by taking it and swinging her into the jitterbug he remembered from his youth. Muscle memory. People laughed and cheered. He kept it up for 3 minutes before, winded, he left for the session room and rose.